You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now we are going to be speaking with Dr. Nikki Jackson. Nikki is speaking at the Centre for Addiction Research One Day Symposium on November 28th. She's speaking in the current research session about her work on the relationship between neighbourhoods and adolescent drinking. I spoke with Dr. Jackson about what her current research entails.
My focus was on looking at the role of the neighbourhood in adolescent alcohol use. I was interested in not just the physical environment, like all of the alcohol outlets, but I really wanted to kind of capture more upstream factors. So what about the poverty in the neighbourhood? What about the neighbourhood stigma? What about the social connections, the social fabric of the community? How do these kind of factors influence adolescent alcohol use? Because there's just such a gap in this literature. It's really surprising.
And I'm sure that that is a gap that is anecdotally among young people quite well recognised. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Young people hang out in their neighbourhood, so it's bound to have some type of influence on their drinking.
I mean, when I was, I grew up in West Auckland.
So. I'm in West Auckland right now.
Brilliant. And so we had this theory, a friend of mine, we had this theory that depending on what part of the city you came from depended on where you kind of went to hang out.
Absolutely.
And so we kind of figured that in West Auckland we could afford, we had a little bit of money, you know, a little bit of money for a little bit of gas, a little bit of liquor, a little bit of tobacco, and we could get a little bit out of West Auckland. So we kind of hung out in the central west quite a bit. Is that the kind of thing that you're looking into? Because this is about the social gradient in adolescent drinking.
Yeah. So we know that kind of as you move kind of from richer to poorer neighbourhoods, the level of hazardous drinking goes up. And we need to explore what are those factors that's giving rise. And you're absolutely right that and we know that young people actually cluster usually within poor neighbourhoods, so that Auckland, for example, is incredibly segregated in terms of rich in poor communities now. So people will spend more time in disadvantaged communities. So they'll be exposed to more outlets, they'll have longer trading hours, they'll have cheaper alcohol, but they'll also be surrounded by all of the experiences that occur within deprived communities. There's lots of great things that happen in these areas as well, but there's lots of risk factors which predispose young people to drinking. And we know that when you have communities of low socioeconomic position, you know, I commute for an hour a day just to get to work because I have less time to spend in my neighbourhood, less time to interact with my neighbours. I've got, you know, neighbourhood stigma of where I live, so people don't want to kind of connect with one another. So all of these kind of issues means that communities aren't kind of looking out for one another and observing what adolescents are doing and kind of taking some kind of control about what's going on in their neighbourhood boundaries. Whereas in more, say, richer areas where, you know, the commuting time is obviously less and people spend more time in their neighbourhood, those social connections are much greater and they really protect young people from their drinking.
It does seem like, you know, you hang out in communities that are poor or what have you, and you see youths on the street doing something that may or may not be dodgy.
Yeah.
But instead of asking or getting involved or engaging in some way with those young people, people just tend to look past and walk past. And do you find that contributes a lot to that disconnect and also to that increasing, lack of community spirit?
Absolutely. And this is not just alcohol. I mean, the research now internationally shows that when you have communities that look out for one another and intervene and where people feel that there are others noticing their behaviour, you get lower levels of crime, lower levels of obesity, lower levels of suicide, improved mental health, better use of health services. These kind of social connections that happen in neighbourhoods are actually so influential for all health and social outcomes.
So you've just completed your doctoral studies in, and I'm reading these words here that I don't really understand, in the section of epidemiology and biostatistics. So what does that mean for a layman like myself who does not know anything about science?
Absolutely. It means that we're trying to look at the impact of different exposures, whether that's your neighbourhood, whether that's your peers, whether that's your schools, whether that's the society you live in. And we're trying trying to understand kind of the causal relationships of, does X cause Y? That's what we're trying to look at in populations. So not necessarily individuals, but we want to see the wider environment and where you're living in, how does that influence your health? And we can use a number of what we call epidemiological research methods to try and capture that. So above you being poor individually, above you being a male or a certain ethnic group, what is it about the place that you live in that impacts upon your health?
So whereabouts are you? Are you focusing your research on particular areas in Auckland or particular neighbourhoods? I mean, are there case studies you're looking at? How do you go about gathering? Because this does seem like a vast quantity of data to work through.
Absolutely. And it's a national study. So thankfully, there's been three national youth surveys now, one in 2000, one 2007, one 2012, of almost 10,000 adolescents in each survey. And the great thing about these surveys is that we ask them about where they live. So we can tag that to the individual and then start looking at all of those exposures in their neighbourhood. And they gave us, they reported their drinking, they reported their mental health status, a whole range of health indicators. So we've got this great data at our fingertips where we can start to look at some of these relationships.
So is it a case of the data already exists, we just have to go through it and look at it in a different way to make it meaningful in this context?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, there were 600 questions in the survey. So, you know, to other students out there that are interested in doing research, there's just a wealth of information of anything you're interested in to kind of, you know, look a bit deeper. It is just a cross-sectional study, so we're not following people over time, but it does start to generate some theories of things that we can look at next.
Where do you hope this research will end up in? I mean, you're involved in alcohol policy.
Yep.
I mean, what do you think the ideal outcome of what this research will be used for is for you?
Yeah, there's kind of two reasons. I want to really shift the debate much more upstream. I want to talk about poverty issues. I want to talk about social fabric of communities and get away from some of the, or maybe in addition to talking about some of the real immediate factors that influence adolescent alcohol use. You know, let's look at what's going on in our society and the way that we're interacting with one another. I want to turn the debate much more up towards that end because there's just no literature in this field. The other thing is that I'm heavily involved in Auckland's local alcohol policy, which you may or may not know, is going to be heard in the courts next year. Auckland Council has one of the best local alcohol policies in the country, but the alcohol industry, amongst others, have appealed this policy. And this could really have a significant positive impact on adolescent drinking. And so I'm involved in this court hearing to make sure that the judge sees the evidence that we have collected and so that this policy can be adopted.
I had no idea that that was going through the court. So what exactly... So the alcohol industry is suing the council?
Yes, not suing as such. So what's happened is that the new liquor laws that were brought in 2012 allowed every council around the country to develop their own local alcohol policy. So they could say how long premises could be open for, when they had to close at night, how many bottle stores they would be, where they can be, can they be close to schools, can they be close to universities. And so Auckland developed their policy, so did many other councils around the country. And the alcohol industry have opposed all but one. And some of them have been going through the courts, and Auckland's will go through the court potentially in February next year. And so it's really important that, as I say, that we hold on to some of these measures and these policies, like no more bottle stores in deprived neighbourhoods. Things like that. We need to hold on to these measures.
I do imagine that if you're that one council that they weren't opposing, you'd be sitting there going, oh, maybe we should have been a bit more harsh.
No comment.
I just really like to know who that was. Anyway, I wonder what one of the most interesting kind of gaps when you talk about, you know, deprived neighbourhoods and what happens there and how this plays out in people's day-to-day lives, and then you talk about big things like, you know, alcohol policy going through the courts or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It does seem like there is just this huge disconnect in between these adolescents who are drinking and seeing things in their communities and all that, and these big kind of more existential issues over the overall direction and all that kind of thing. One of my favouritely, you know, most depressing, but also, you know, favourite sayings is like, you're just too poor to care. Like, you're too poor to buy organic. You're too poor to care about, you know, going vegan or anything like that.
Yeah.
So do you think that by focusing on the wider picture, rather than just having it being a single issue, you know,
yes,
teens are drinking in this neighborhood.
Because
yeah, for the teens, they're standing there going, well, yeah, and, you know,
yeah,
like, this is a very depressing place. I have a beer. It's all good.
Yeah.
Do you think that this research will help contribute to bridging that gap in between the discourses that are happening in the communities themselves and then in wider society?
Yeah, but we need more people to get behind this kind of approach. Our research is not generally funded around what we call the social determinants of health. We need increasingly to kind of be focusing in these areas. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I've been protesting on the streets down in many areas within Auckland to try and join communities in their opposition to liquor licences. And many continue to lose. They already have a proliferation of bottle stores, and then they get another one right next to a high school. So it's really unfair that not only do poor communities have these high density of liquor outlets, they have to keep fighting them individually on a case-by-case basis. That's why we need a policy in place, which can mean that communities are not having to present each time to a liquor hearing and to be heard.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.